Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 7 of season 2. Pivot. It's a word from basketball practice or tango dance class, but this past year it has gained far more currency. You rarely hear a COVID-19 media commentary that doesn't use that word, pivot. But what does pivot look like down on the farm or at the craft brewery?
I know lots of farmers who have expanded their business this past year and have plans to continue to expand this coming year.
When times are good, people drink, and when times are tough, they drink more.
People want it local. It was our busiest year yet, even in our petting farm.
The pandemic caused no kink in any kind of our supply chains.
Some of the shows this season, including this one, will include updates and reflections on this past year and counting. What has been happening in the world of food and farming? We'll meet some old friends and make some new ones. Just a note here, I apologize for the quality of the interview sound in these programs. Given the COVID-19 restrictions, our chats are limited to the internet. I know, we're getting used to listening to substandard digitized recordings on radio and TV, but I still don't like it. Ah, well. We start out today by heading to Robbins Family Farm and Gardens, just outside of Deer Lake, and chatting with Terry Lynn Robbins. By the way, the chickens at the beginning of these shows were recorded at her farm a couple of years ago. They've become famous. I ask her about changes on the farm this past year.
A couple of things kind of happened with us pre-COVID. A year ago in October, my mom passed away. You know, my mom worked for us full time and was such a huge part of our farm and played a very important role here. She took care of all the greenhouses and the greenhouse plants, yeah. The flowers and the hanging baskets were her specialty. Usually January month we use as our planning month. And so I kind of said to Bill, I don't think I want to do flowers this year. You know, that was my mom's thing. And I don't know that I want to do them. Like, we'd already had the plugs and cuttings all ordered and everything anyway. But I said, you know, for me, it's an emotional thing. I'm still in a grieving process and I don't know that I want to do that. And then COVID happened on March 13th and then the flights were all canceled. And so we actually couldn't get our plugs and cuttings in. So the pandemic made that decision for me. The other thing, you know, I had been thinking about for the last couple of years, I really wanted to do like a CSA program, but I didn't want it to be your typical CSA with just veggies. I wanted to do something different. So just before the pandemic, on March 1st, my dad and I went to Ontario for a little trip. And while I was up there, I was up in Meaford and visiting our daughter who had a HelloFresh delivery. So I was cooking with this HelloFresh delivery and I was inspired by it because as I was taking everything out of the bag and reading recipes, I thought, oh, I grow that. Oh yeah, we do that. We raise that. You know, we have chickens. We have, you know. So on the entire drive back, I spent the entire time putting together my thoughts on how I felt we needed to have a CSA program. But I didn't want it to be a typical CSA because we also have fresh eggs and we raise our own beef and pork and lamb. And I wanted it to be something different. And I wanted it to not just be about our farm, but I believe that in order for us to be successful, you know, we have to work with other farms as well. I wanted to be able to highlight some of the things that happen here in the Humber Valley at the same time. And so I put together what we called our Farm Fresh Food Box. It was a 14-week program that included a dozen eggs, a meat of the week, and fresh veggies and herbs or fruits, not just from our farm, but highlight some of the things that are grown by other farms that we don't do. But it would also, we also included things like honey from the Cormac Bee Company and goat cheese from 8 Day Acres and different things like that. So every week there was something extra special in there to highlight one of the other farms. I wanted people to know what's grown here here in the Humber Valley. And I said, you know, it's our first year, even if we just trial it and maybe 10 families. And he said, well, if we're going to have 10, let's go for 20. Let our goal be 20. And so we capped it at 36. And it was wonderful. I mean, it was great. It was fabulous. I loved working with the other farms. I loved being able to highlight some of the other farms. So this was the pandemic made us focus 100% on food production. I'm already planning now for this year. We're going to expand the program because we're expanding our own production as well. We're actually going to focus on having our Thanksgiving weekend being our final week and having turkeys as well.
So did that program take up pretty much all of the produce that you were creating, or were you doing some selling as well at other markets?
Everything that we grew was to supply our program, and then we picked up some other things from other markets as well. Yeah. So we used carrots from Wright's Farm. We did iceberg lettuce from Wright's. So we used cabbage from Rite Aid's, and we also used zucchini from Rocky River Farms. And, you know, so we were trying to spread the love around.
Do you feel that people were more concerned about local food, or their awareness was raised? Is that what you experienced?
Just our customer base alone, absolutely. People wanted local. It was our busiest year yet, even in our petting farm. Our petting farm, of course, we do guided tours. And one of the number one priorities for our petting farm isn't just to touch and feel and love all the animals, but we use a guided tour so that we can actually talk about Newfoundland agriculture and connect people to where their food comes from. We had over 1,000 people in 2 months through our petting farm. We were only opened on Saturdays and Sundays for 5 hours each day. And people were very much interested in learning where their food comes from and wanting to know how they can have all local.
You can go out to eat, that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew, make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with egg, eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake. Homegrown tomato, homegrown tomato. What life be without homegrown tomato? Only two things that money can't buy.
That's Guy Clark with the anthem Homegrown Tomatoes, something that my first guest today certainly appreciates. I start off this section of my chat with Terry Lynn Robbins by asking whether she was able to do her kids' agricultural camps this past summer.
We were. I will be very honest. One of the reasons why I decided that I really wanted to fight for this new CSA program, because I thought, oh my gosh, like when they started canceling schools, and I thought, I'm not going to be able to do my farm camp. And our children's programs are really very near and dear to my heart. And the thought of not being able to do them was heartbreaking. But also from a business perspective, what will we do to replace that income? And so, you know, we had to think about that too. You like to think it's, you know, all hearts and sunshine, but you have to think about it financially as well. And so, you know, I thought, okay, well, if I can't do farm camp, then I have to replace that income. And then once, you know, the summer was creeping slowly closer, we decided, okay, well, if they give the go-ahead for summer camps, then we're in. And the restrictions, you know, were pretty hard, but we do everything outside. The only time the kids are inside is literally when we're in the barn feeding animals. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we are outside, rain or shine. So we created a safe space. We decided to limit the number of kids that we would have. And we decided, just as an extra measure, we would close to the public. So we closed our petting farm from Monday to Friday, and we actually were sold out every week. So we did 3 weeks of farm camp. We took 2 weeks off from regular farm camp and did 5 half-day preschool programs, like toddler and mom or dad. And then we did 3 more weeks of farm camp. And in total, we had 210 kids for all of our programs. Just like our petting farm, farm. Everything we do is about raising awareness about where your food comes from and Newfoundland agriculture. So it was such a great summer.
So that means there's 210 little ambassadors for local food out there now?
I think so. I'm very fortunate that I have some really great friends that work in our industry and have helped us to build on our programs.
So in terms of the food production itself, were you disadvantaged?
Everything we did from seed because, again, no flights coming in for plugs and cuttings. Making that decision so late in the game to go from no flour production to all vegetables meant that we were placing seed orders later than we probably should have. You know, we had to make some substitutions, but we still got them in. And the other thing, because of the pandemic and no flights, we couldn't get in when we did chick orders. We order chicks in from Fry's Hatchery in Ontario. And we usually partner with Wayne Simmons down at Hammond Farm and Hammond Feed Store. We've done that in the last couple of years. So that's turkey chicks, layer chicks, as well as broiler chicks. And we normally do 2 or 3 orders per year. This year, because of the no flight thing, we couldn't bring in any orders until the end of June. So we were able to do 1 order at the end of June and 1 order that came in the first week in September. This year with the 2 orders, we had, I think, 6,700 birds that we brought in. So I think not even just for us, but the pandemic made everybody into a backyard farmer. There were seed shortages, you know, in all the stores. We were constantly inundated with phone calls from people asking, do you have starter vegetables that you're selling? Are you selling seed? We bring in piglets every year. We raise piglets. And so we even had customers that ordered some piglets through us as well. Everybody became aware of food security issues.
Yeah. So do you think that will last?
I think for the majority, it will. When I joke and say the pandemic, you know, made everybody into a backyard farmer, I'm going to guess about 80% of those people have become lifers. They're the people that will always grow their own food now. You know, they enjoyed the whole experience of having maybe some layer hens or growing, maybe having a small potato patch or growing some lettuces or tomatoes or maybe a full-on garden with lots more than that. The people that did it, for the most part, everybody enjoyed it enough that they're going to continue. In talking to a lot of other farmers, I think it made people think outside the box. And not even just in the agriculture industry, I think in business in general, it forced people to diversify. The pandemic showed us that we can't just keep doing things the way we have been doing them. We don't know what our new normal will look like or if it'll change from what it is today. So I think, you know, the silver lining of it is it made people think outside the box in a positive way. The people that were thinking about expanding their food production, it showed them that the market is there. I know lots of farmers who have expanded their business this past year and have plans to continue to expand this coming year. Even though I tend to be a positive thinker, you know, I'd rather look at the silver lining. You know, there were some days when I have maybe felt a little bitter about having to think outside the box, but I think as a region, as a province, I think we've done really well with listening to what we had to do.
Thanks for taking some time here, and all best in the next year.
Anytime.
Have eyes to change this life I lead. I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, cause I know what this country needs. Homegrown tomato in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in a garden would be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only 2 things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only 2 things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. All right.
That was Guy Clark's Homegrown Tomatoes. Our next guest works just up the road from Terry Lynn Robbins' farm. We're heading to Cormac, to the Crooked Feeder Brewing Company. They've carved a craft brewery, sales outlet, and tap room out of a former sawmill, and they also operate a gastropub in Cornerbrook. I check in with Robert Sutton, one of the partners of Crooked Feeder, and start out by asking what has happened with their business over the past year.
Well, the brew pub shut down for a couple of months until early July, and then we got started up again down there. I mean, we're half capacity, but we're holding our own. We opened up here in July again as well. We've seen quite a bit of staycationers. Yep. In the meantime, we moved into bottling. Get our beer out since we couldn't have people in. And that's working really well. So actually by the last week of December, we surpassed our sales from the year before.
So that pivot worked out pretty well for you.
Yeah, it sort of forced our hand to get in packaging sooner than we had anticipated. And when times are good, people drink. And when times are tough, they drink more.
Are you able to bottle there at your place in Cormac?
We looked at some bottling units online, and what we were getting for the money we were spending wasn't really adequate. So we built our own. So the Forehead bottling unit, Dad built for about the same price as one we could have got from the States, but it wasn't quite as robust. And we have two people here bottling, and they can do 1,100 bottles in a day. But bottles are heavy. They're heavy to ship in. They're heavy to ship out. And capping is not as good as canning. So we will be moving into canning in the next 2 months. Three pallets of bottles weigh about 5,000 pounds. One pallet of cans weighs like 250. Cans sell better, and they're easier for them to stock because they don't take up as much space. The consumer is demanding new beer all the time. We did get a few fellows come in and like, yeah, all I drink is Michelob Ultra, or all I drink is Molson Canadian, and they'll try something like a coffee porter, and they can't believe the product. Big beer convinced you that beer shouldn't have flavor and it tastes great. Keep it icy cold so it goes down and it don't taste like anything. So when we brew our light beer, I try it and I was like, okay, it doesn't taste like anything. We succeeded.
And you probably sell a fair bit of it.
More for local people. Yeah. And I work quite a bit at the restaurant because it goes well with food, I guess.
You're able, obviously, to keep up with your brewing, you know, 1,100 cans a day plus all the other stuff that you're selling. Have you ramped up? Are you brewing more than you were a year ago?
Yes. Yeah. We're brewing every 4 days now. And I've got two new tanks on the way. So I'll be brewing Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. I left my government job.
Was that a hard decision?
No, because the work environment had become a bit toxic down there. We were moved from big office buildings into cubicles, and I wasn't quite content there anymore. And so I decided for everybody's best interest, and it would be really hard to train somebody else to be our brewer on our homemade gear. So I decided it was better for me to leave, brew full time. And one of us had to make the move, and I was the one with the brewing experience. So
yeah. Sounds like it's working out at this point anyway.
Pretty good, yeah. And yeah, I'm well, my family life is a lot better because I'm not trying to run this place after hours.
How many different kinds of beer are you selling these days?
Well, just behind me on tap here, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's 12 on tap here, plus there's a few I don't have on. Probably upwards of 15 to 20 different styles or kinds of beer. We do a lot of fruit sours. Now, the diehard beer drinker is like, I wish you guys would laugh fruit sours. It's like, well, that's what's selling. And we've still got 8 other kinds of beer that you can fill your boots.
Like, there are trends in beer. Like, the IPAs were really big for a while, and the fruit, the sours are big. What's the next trend?
Now, the IPAs are still really popular, but fruit sours seem to be more popular. I think it's because you're getting non-beer drinkers into the fold. Super hazy IPAs is a big thing now, but I think just flavors.
You've tried to use local products as much as possible. Are you continuing to have some success with that?
Yeah, well, right now, we're after running Mark's Market out of whatever they had left for a year, they do so much jam and other things, so they didn't have a lot. We've got the last of their strawberries and their rhubarb and their black currants, and I had a little bit of partridge berry, cranberry, and blueberry around, so I've still got a little bit of that to put out some treats, basically. Yep. And I've got a load of rhubarb here now. I'm going to try blueberry rhubarb beer because I've heard that it makes good jam, so why not? I'll prepare better next year. We're going to build a walk-in freezer and load up when the blueberries are good, and partridge berries, I was a little late to the game, but I got enough to do a little bit of experimenting. Cranberries are easier to get because Loman's Farms had quite a freezer full. Wow. And I'm hoping to get a bit of winter wheat from Melv, the ride out, so that I can do another nice Effenweisen. So
with this pandemic, a lot of people have been talking about how individuals are more interested in local food. Has that happened with local beer?
It seemed to here, especially when everybody was kind of locked down. You'd get on a Saturday, people would come up to Cormac, they'd buy their beer here, their meat at D&D Farms, and they'd get their cheese from the 8th Day Acres. And also now there's another little farm called the Upper Humber Settlement. They're a permaculture. They've just opened up and they had a thing called an honesty market. So basically they had their produce at the end of the driveway and take what you like, leave your money or send an e-transfer. And that seemed to work pretty well too. They've got a little B&B opened up here now and they've got their little farm. And I was all spring getting duck eggs from them. So they're doing some pretty neat things.
Last time I asked about a piece of music and you, I think you had Gordon Lightfoot was what you suggested because you listened to that. Is there another piece of music you can think of?
One of my favorite other signs is John Denver, Country Road. That song, well, no pun intended, sings to me, right? Like, it's just yeah. There's something about it.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong. West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home. Country roads, all my memories gather round her. Miner's lady, stranger to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky. Misty taste of moonshine, teardrop in my eye. Country roads, take me home to the place.
That, of course, was Take Me Home, Country Roads, performed by the guy who wrote it, John Denver. I requested my second guest today, Robert Sutton of Crooked Feeder Brewing in Cormac, Newfoundland, Labrador. Let's get back to that conversation, recorded earlier this year.
So how's, in general, the craft beer market in Newfoundland, Labrador, how is it doing these days? Is that still a tight group of people who are cooperating?
Yeah, the group hasn't expanded in a while because nothing has opened since the pandemic. Well, actually, no, that's not true. Bumblebee Brew Company opened up in Billy's Island. So they've got a pizza place and a B&B and a little brewery. They seem to be doing really well, according to their social media. And there's a few other places I've been hearing rumors of, but nothing like out east. Holyrood and Torbay are two locations I keep hearing and pop up. Yeah. And I think the crew that wanted to open up a place in Bayvert are still actively pursuing. But everybody seems to be selling what they can make. We're at 50% capacity ourselves.
And access to the consumer is still okay? Like there's a variety of ways. You've got some direct access, but through the NLC, are they opening up more spaces?
Yeah, well, NLC would take a lot more than we only supply two NLC stores. We've been to Grand Falls and we sell in the Corner Brook. Like we have a few little stores. We ship to St. Anthony. Yeah. We send to Rocky Harbor. Norris Point, a couple of places in Deer Lake and Corner Brook. And so basically we haven't cultivated any more market than we can handle. The pandemic caused no kink in any kind of our supply chains. I mean, it was super brutal on most of the tourism operators locking down the bubble or anything outside the bubble. But I mean, by looking at the rest of Canada, they did it right. Like I believe that it's a terrible virus and that we're lucky that we have a moat. And I mean, we've got the definite points of entry that they locked down well. And I mean, I know it's been tough, but it's kept us safe. I think everybody banded together well, I think. And I mean, we did pretty good here off staycationers too, who at least said, you know what, we can't go away, but we can go some. And we did it ourselves. I mean, I've seen parts of the island the summer that I had never seen before, and it was quite nice. Yeah. So we tried to stay in a few different communities just to spread our money around. And because we were lucky, we still had good incomes. So I felt a responsibility too. I used to do quite a bit of shopping at convenience stores. Even though it was more expensive than the grocery store, I felt like I should dump some of my paycheck into a convenience store.
So there are some positives, I suppose, about all of this as well in terms of revaluing local.
I know D&D Farms, they saw such an amount of business. They were running out of meat and they had to hire people. And the other abattoir here in town had to hire people and we had to hire people. And the government came through pretty good for us with some tax breaks, some craft breweries. Some of the public thought we were lying in our pockets. And I did an interview on CBC and they were like, so this mean more profits? I was like, well, no, profits be awesome. I said, this allows us, and they said, buy more equipment. I said, no, actually, I said, it allows us to hire people to utilize the equipment we have, which then would allow us to add equipment, which we can then hire more people. Right. I said, because it's all about people.
So how many do you have working there now?
Most days there are myself and three others. And then we bring in another girl who works on the weekends for the tap room. And she also comes in now and then, this sort of odd job in it. And we're going to need maybe two or three more staff when the summer hits. Yeah. I'll start calling Cornbrook with 13 staff, I think.
Have you designed any pandemic beers, anything sort of as a response?
No, there's a few breweries that have. We chose not to. Okay. I just wanted to keep it local or funky to the fruit and stuff. I didn't feel comfortable trading on the name. So it's just, there's nothing wrong. I mean, I bought enough pandemics and I mean, I was fine with it all. We just chose not to. We just put out a beer, Cherry Sour, Crooked and Crimson. So and that worked out really nice. And our Come On We Goza, we just released that again because it goes as like a salted coriander sour. And so Newfoundland's Come On We Goza. So we had Come On We Goza. Another one was a fruit sour that had strawberries, cranberries, and partridge berries. So we called it Raid the Freezer. And we had Howley Blueberry Burst and or Blast, I think it was. And
I was going to ask if you're able to have music again.
Yeah, we do. With small crowds, we've got a 22 capacity with our half. And last weekend, Mike McDonald, the local talent, was here. The weekend before, we had a fellow from Trout River, Daryl Poirier. Okay. And it was his first time ever playing for a paying gig. So he did a really nice job. People had a good time. And then we're doing a little Valentine's Day thing here. We got a local caterer coming. She was wondering what to charge for tickets. I said, well, you tell me what you're charging me. I said, and that's what I'm passing along. I don't want to make any money off of you. I said, we just want to have a good time here. We'll sell beer. I was going to say, we're only kind of breaking even on music here now, but we just want to bring in new clientele and stay relevant.
Chances are somebody might get a few bottles to take home with them then too.
Yep, exactly. Or the next time they're out looking at the store and they see it, they're like, oh yeah, I was up and I seen that there. I had a pint.
And you really tried to have local foods as well.
Yes. Break Time Catering at a Deer Lake is doing the meal and she can't source the chicken breast local, but she's going to get the veggies from Rite Aid's Farms and so like things like that, right? So she tries to source as local as she can as well.
The Cormac region and Deer Lake, you've got quite a few food producers and so on. And will there ever be a kind of a branding or, I don't know, not branding, maybe not the right word, but for that region?
I don't know, actually, but it's probably not a bad thing to investigate. So we did an online concert with a musician from Cornbrook, but he's living in Ottawa. And we decided to put it together and we did a prize pack. And we had, I think, 8 different vendors in Cormac donate. So, and we included Grossmore Coffee Roasters in it because we use them so much. But we had coffee and we had cheese and we had meat and we had honey and we had something with the new settlement. We had a load of stone from a local excavation company and Rite Aid's donated vegetables and some preserves. It was amazing, actually. Never really thought about that. So like a local brand for the West Coast producers.
Or even if it's virtual, you know, people, if they're planning a vacation, staycation, whatever it is, here's where the B&Bs are. Here's where I can pick up food. Here's where I can have a drink.
Might be something to talk to our tourism department about. Actually, next time I see Paul Taylor, I'll say like maybe we should do some kind of a web design as the Western hub or something.
And consumers are aware of it because people go up, as you say, and they pick up cheese and they pick up meat and some beer and so on. But sometimes it's only people who are in the region who kind of are in the know.
Yeah, but the minute people from the East Coast or Central want to come in, it's like, okay, what's here? If that's sort of highlighted at all, it'd be like amazing.
The new hot place to be would be Cormac, you know?
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
Well, Robert, thanks so much. Good luck with everything. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks for reaching out. We'll see you again.
Take care. Yeah, we'll see you. Bye-bye. Bye.
The pivot. It can seem like an imposition at times, even painful. By definition, a pivot is a central point, pin, or a shaft on which a mechanism turns. And turning on a central pin can be uncomfortable. But as the stories show, in the end, it can also be a way to nudge us into a path that we were thinking about taking anyways.
I wanted it to be something different, and I wanted it to not just be about our farm, but I wanted to be able to highlight some of the things that happen here in the Humber Valley at the same time.
Once we hit that we can't see to make any more beer, then we'll ease off the gas, I guess.
The pandemic showed us that we can't just keep doing things the way we have been doing them.
Consumer is demanding new beer all the time.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Homegrown Tomatoes by Guy Clark and Country Roads by John Denver. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by the Steel Wheels. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Big Beer convinced you that beer shouldn't have flavor.
The pandemic made everybody into a backyard farmer.